Thanks for listening to the best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to the best of the Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
How about the fact that Antonio Brown tried to sneak an old helmet into Raiders practice and spray painted it so he could use his old helmet from the Steelers?
I was going to say,
that is brilliant.
Do you think it was just a Steelers helmet, like a little red and blue, and there's like a little black and gold on top? And
Did he go one coat? Did he forget the decal, and that's how he got busted? For those of you that are wondering, how the hell did Antonio Brown do something like that? The story comes out earlier, according to Adam Schefter of ESPN, who talked about how Antonio Brown has filed a grievance with the NFL, has threatened to not play. He will retire if he doesn't get to use his old helmet that he's been using his entire career. The Raiders have tried to send him several helmets, different models for him to try. He doesn't want any part of them. He said it obstructs his vision, the way these new helmets slide down. So he is threatening no longer playing in the NFL if he doesn't get his way. Mike Silver of the NFL Network is also reporting that Antonio Brown tried to sneak in by spray painting or painting up his old helmet. He's done it a couple of times to where he's tried to sneak it in. They've had to remove him from practice at one point. So you add this onto his melting feet and everything else going on in Napa Valley, and HBO's got themselves a hell of an episode 2 on Hard Knocks.
And it's amazing because he won't be there for anything, because the other report today is that no one can get a hold of him. Apparently, he can get a hold of the NFL. Yeah. He just has Roger Goodell on line one, but the other, what was it, radio silent, no one has heard from him.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
He's unbelievable. I will defend him on this, though. I get that it's 2019, we got to worry about safety and helmets and concussion protocol. Can we just let the man wear the helmet that he wants to wear? Like, it's not a leather helmet. He's not Jim Thorpe here. Like, I don't know. To me, it just feels like one of those. It's a very simple solution. NFL, make him sign some waiver that protects you legally. Let the man wear one helmet. So, you know, that way he doesn't have to get the spray paint, and he doesn't have to, you know, go behind the bleachers and do the spray paint thing. I don't know. To me, just feels like a non-story.
I actually agree with you on this. I know Robert Guerra, our executive producer, he loves when his hosts agree, so I plan on agreeing with Aaron Torres as much as possible.
Go.
Screw you to behind the glass, Robert Guerra, our executive producer. No hot takes here, buddy. But I will say this in all seriousness. If his helmet isn't hurting somebody else, to your point, who cares? I mean, it's not like these stories you hear from high school football, and you know this, playing high school football, covering college football. You hear these horror stories about guys, carving their buckles into sharp points so when somebody goes to tackle them, they cut up their hands. There's stories like that that have been out there. If Antonio Brown's not doing that, and he is willing to sign a waiver, and he wants to play with what is considered an outdated helmet, and he's okay with it, hey, man, do what you got to do. It's your career. NFL players have said for the longest time, we don't care so much about the head stuff. We just don't want our knees taken out. So if this is a situation where he's okay with the ramifications of what may occur, not a fact or a guarantee of what may occur, let him play with whatever he wants to play, and then we just see how everything folds and unfolds during the regular season.
Yeah, and it was funny because when I saw this story, what I thought, first of all, you know, Antonio Brown just, you know, he is Hard Knocks in and of himself. The cameras just need to be following him. But also, this reminds me of, this is a super obscure rule, and I'm going to talk a little hockey. I'm guessing maybe the first time hockey's ever been discussed on the Odd Couple. And don't worry, we're not breaking.
It'll make sense. Don't turn the channel.
Yes.
We swear to God.
We're not talking like Red Wings blue line here. But I know nothing about hockey, but I do know this, is that there was a time when hockey players did not wear helmets on the ice. Like, go to YouTube, Gordie Howe's playing until he's 55 and he's taking pucks off the head and just doing Gordie Howe things, right? And then at some point, somebody in the NHL office was like, yeah, this is not a great idea to just have these guys skating around taking pucks off the face. And so, obviously, now guys all wear helmets, they wear the face shield, etc. But they grandfathered it in where anybody that had been in the league that didn't want to wear a helmet didn't have to once the new rules were put into place. Anybody that came into the league at that point had to wear the new helmets. I don't understand why this has to be a public back-and-forth thing, and it sounds like if Antonio Brown's filing grievances, it's going to get uglier before it gets better. Just say, like, dude, if you're an old school guy, you want to wear your old school helmet, you've been in the league for 7, 8, 9 years like Antonio Brown has, that's fine. Everybody, you're a rookie, you're coming in from now on, you just got to wear what we tell you.
Yeah, no, and Craig McTavish, by the
way. That was a guy.
Little Craig McTavish.
I wasn't going to drop the name, but yeah. Since you know it, yeah.
Little Craig McTavish. Nothing like a little mid-90s hockey talk in the middle of August. Iron Torres, what we do here.
Whose best years were in the 70s, but it's okay. Yeah. We're really hitting the demographic hard right now.
Don't worry, we are going to have an all Craig McTavish hour here on Fox Sports Radio. That's coming up on August the 33rd. You can find that all Craig McTavish hour here. Nothing but NHL coming up on August the 33rd. But that being said, the reason, and you know the NFL, this is what the NFL does with everything. They overreact to PR and public backlash. It's what they do.
Oh, yeah.
They did it with the anthem stuff. They did it with the safety stuff. They did it with the domestic violence issues that they've had in the league. The NFL overreacts to things. And so because of that, the NFL overreacted to this. And instead of just saying, hey, if you're okay with it, we're okay with it, they took such a beating from all the guys having issues following their careers, the guys dealing with head trauma following their careers, that they're not letting anybody away with being able to sign a waiver or anything like that. You've got to play by our rules, and that's just the way it's got to be. I don't necessarily agree. I think players are smart enough now to understand the risks.
Sure.
All right? If you complain nowadays that you gained a little bit of weight because you ate a bunch of fast food, then you're just an idiot. There's nothing I can do for you. You're an idiot. You're a moron. Stop complaining. You read what's on the back of those boxes. You read, you know the calorie intake. You know everything that's involved. If you haven't gotten the clue yet that it's not good for you to eat fast food 8 days a week, then that's a you problem. The NFL has overreacted to many things in the league, and this feels like them really putting their foot down because they don't want to have to deal with any more of the guy dealt with long-term issues after playing, so on and so forth. It's why the kickoff is so weird. Yeah. It's why they've made some of the targeting rules the way that they are. It feels like Antonio Brown's going to have to just deal with the fact that this is what the league is mandating, and if you want your $30 million guaranteed, deal with it and go play football.
Yeah, the analogy that our buddy Colin Cowherd always uses is, you start smoking cigarettes in 2019, you have nobody to blame but yourself. And it's the same with the NFL. I don't really. So here's the thing, right? Sometimes in sports, there are stories where there are, in theory, two sides, but there's just no win for one side, right? So, like, I'm like the story that came out the other day, Dabo Sweeney, Kelly Bryant, I'm not giving him a championship ring. There's really no public win for Dabo Sweeney to just say he's not giving him a championship ring. And I feel like it's kind of the same way with the NFL. Like, what is the win here? Wow, Antonio Brown, we showed him. He's wearing the helmet. He can't see. He's not as exciting. He's not as good anymore. And he's complaining the whole time. And he's sitting out of training camp and he's filing grievances. Just let the man wear the helmet. It doesn't seem that complicated to me.
Yeah. Now, a conspiracy theory that I threw out there.
Okay.
This probably isn't the greatest conspiracy theory, but you know what? It's a Friday,
sure.
You know, News Dump Friday. This is when you dump all your bad conspiracy theories. A little radio tip for everybody listening here on Fox Sports Radio. I think that HBO took such a beating from the national media and so many people all over the world over the final season of Game of Thrones that I think HBO fixed up Antonio Brown's feet, and they have turned this helmet issue into a bigger issue to get more people to watch the second episode of Hard Knocks. That's what I think.
And they made sure he landed on the Raiders, too.
That's
unbelievable.
Yeah,
wow.
HBO's behind all of it.
So is, like, Bigfoot going to walk through camp on the next episode, too?
Listen, you never know. Crazy things could happen. The Loch Ness Monster could pop out of a wine vineyard. Like, a lot of things could happen at Raiders training camp in Napa on Hard Knocks. I'm just saying, man.
It would be kind of amazing if... because, again, the other story about Antonio Brown, and this just makes it more fun because of the circus that is Antonio Brown no matter where he goes, whether it's Facebook Live and all those things that happen.
Throwing furniture off a balcony.
He's doing Antonio Brown things. It would be amazing if the Raiders can't get a hold of this guy, which has been the report, but the Hard Knocks cameras just know exactly where he is at all times.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be willing to go that far. I just think this is kind of what I'm saying is this is kind of the MO with Antonio Brown. You get him, you get a lot of production on Sundays, and you got to get a lot of headaches Monday through Saturday, and I think this is the latest one.
Look, feed a shark. Don't come crying to me if you have half an arm afterwards. Like, if shark bites your head off and you were swimming underwater with him, I don't know what to tell you. Sorry. That's just the way it goes sometimes.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So NFL preseason, lot going on. We got the Bucks and the Steelers. Unrelated to strip clubs, NFL preseason. So we got Bucks and Steelers right now. But the story last night, a little bit of Kyler Murray. But the real story was Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
So I'll be honest. I was away from the TV at that exact moment. And I go on Twitter and literally about 8 or 9 straight tweets. Daniel Jones. My Saturday partner, Arnie Spanier. Build him the Hall of Fame bust right now. I'm Arnie Spanier. So Daniel Jones, really phenomenal performance. 6 for 6, touchdown pass, and then he's pulled. Keep in mind, this is the same guy who, of course, was booed on draft night, number 6 overall pick, lost to Wake Forest, lost to Pitt. He didn't exactly move the needle at the college level. Booed on draft night, comes out, looks phenomenal. And because of the limited success early in one preseason game, we now have Twitter saying that there should be a quarterback controversy / quarterback battle in New York with the Giants. Do you buy it? Are you ready to just send Eli out to pasture after one drive from Daniel Jones?
Well, that being said, and I got a lot of heat for this, but I defended Dave Gettleman when he chose Daniel Jones because clearly they saw something they liked, and Dave Gettleman knows more about football than I do. And so I take it as, all right, that's what he thinks is his guy. Go ahead, make your pick, and we see what happens. It's one game. All right, everybody's got to calm down. The quarterback controversies, all of that tie into it. Welcome to sports radio, sports talk, sports media nowadays, to where everything is an overreaction. Everything. I think it was an overreaction, the criticism Dave Gettleman got for taking Daniel Jones with the number 6 overall pick in the draft, and I think it was an overreaction for everybody all of a sudden steer their car back the other way in traffic and say, oh, well, my God, we've got a quarterback controversy. One drive, we've seen 6 throws. Everybody just, all right, take it easy. Take it down a notch. Let's see how it plays out. He's going to play this season. He will be the starter this season. I don't have any doubts in my mind. Basically, and my reasoning behind that is Pat Shurmur needs to save his job. All right, you can't have 2 bad years in a New York market and expect to stick around there because the patience may not be there. Pat Shurmur wants to save his job. If he feels like Eli Manning isn't going to save his job, but the hope of Daniel Jones and the promise of Daniel Jones is going to make the organization want him to be the guy to work with Daniel Jones moving forward, he's going to make the switch to save his own gig, and I think Daniel Jones will be the starter.
Before we get to last night, why were you so sold to not rush the process? Why didn't you believe that we should be critical of David Gettleman when there was really no proof of anything that we've seen? And by the way, there was rumors that he would have fallen deep into the first round, maybe into the second if the Giants hadn't taken him at 6. He certainly would have been available with that second pick. Why did you believe that he shouldn't be criticized for that?
I don't buy any of the draft rumors that go into it. I think that a lot of people are trying to steer people in different directions. I think they use the media as pawns in their mixed messaging game. And so when it comes to the draft, I feel like if you're an organization and you've got conviction in a player and you like that player at that spot, you take a chance and you go and you pick him. Don't wait around in hopes that you're going to lose him. When the Bears traded up to get Trubisky, I backed him on it. I said, look, they didn't want to take a chance, even though nobody believes that he would have fallen any further past where he fell. Don't take the chance you're going to lose out on him. Go ahead and make the move and take your quarterback. I think that they liked what they saw. There was a familiarity. Bucky Brooks talked about it with David Cutcliffe and that situation and the Mannings as well, too. And I think they felt like he was the best fit for that system and that quarterback. I think Pat Shurmur knows what he's doing. I think Dave Gettleman, despite what people say, knows more than people let on to believe. And I'm willing to trust those guys who have been around the game longer than I have to make the right decision. If he bombs, then he bombs and everybody else was right. I don't want to jump on a guy until I actually see some proof that he sucks.
Yeah, as my Saturday partner Arnie Spanier says, I don't got 5 years to wait to see if he's going to make it work.
Oh, my God.
But I don't necessarily disagree. I kind of disagree. But about back to last night, because I did think it was interesting how quick the quarterback controversy conversation came up, right? Like, it was all like you said, Daniel Jones, the worst quarterback. He lost to Pitt. He lost to Wake Forest. Now he's going to come. And then he was phenomenal. Where the thing that's really interesting to me about what happened last night is this, is that normally I'm on Team Jonas Knox in the sense that any overreaction to NBA Summer League or NFL preseason, I don't buy. I don't buy the guy that goes for 31 points in his Summer League debut and say, give him Rookie of the Year.
Oh,
right?
You don't? Go. Oh, that's the move, though.
Yeah.
That's a hot take society. Come on.
So I bring that up because I wouldn't normally say, like, let's rush to judgment and Daniel Jones, he's the future. Bring Eli behind the shed and hit him over the head with a shovel. Like, I wouldn't normally do that. But isn't some of the quarterback controversy conversation that has started on Eli? Because normally, again, if it was just me watching a guy in the preseason, a rookie, go 6 for 6, throw for a touchdown pass on his opening drive, I would say, all right, slow your roll. But I do think part of this is on Eli. There is a reason that the Giants were drafting 6 overall. There is a reason, by the way, people forget this, that Ben McAdoo benched him 2 years ago. And so I think part of the reason is because people are like, yeah, Eli really hasn't been that good. This guy actually gives us a little bit of hope. Normally, I wouldn't be so quick to jump on the Daniel Jones bandwagon, but I feel like part of this is Eli's responsibility as well.
Yeah, and really it's this easy. Has Eli Manning, in your opinion, peaked as a quarterback?
I would say yes.
Yes. And I don't think that's, you can even question that. So if he's peaked as a quarterback and you know what he is and you know what he's going to be, then guess what? It's time at some point to pull the trigger and make the move to Daniel Jones. And I think that's going to happen sooner rather than later. And the media that pushed back on Ben McAdoo for wanting to bench, and that story gets a little twisted because everyone says, oh my God, Ben McAdoo wanted to bench Eli Manning. No, actually, that's not how it happened. What happened was Ben McAdoo told Eli Manning, look, we want to see a little bit of Geno Smith, so we're going to give him the second half. But, we know you got your consecutive start streak, so let's go ahead and we'll start you. And Eli Manning just said, no, if you're just going to bench me in the second half, just don't play me at all. Okay, so he did. And then a bunch of people got fired, and everybody ripped the Giants, and everybody came to the defense of Eli Manning. And here we go again, similar to the hot take and the overcorrection to what we had before. Now everybody's jumping on with the, oh, Eli Manning's done and he's finished. Well, what, I mean, Ben McAdoo tried to tell you that 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and nobody wanted to believe him. So Eli Manning and his performance is yes, absolutely the reason why there's an issue here. And I also think Pat Shurmur and also Dave Gettleman know that in that market, with that franchise, with some of the scrutiny that comes along with it, if they have another crummy season with not a lot of hope on the for next year or the year afterwards, that those guys are in trouble and are going to lose their jobs. And at some point, I think they're probably going to hand the keys over to Daniel Jones, and that's going to be the start of a brand new quarterback era in New York.
Well, it's really interesting, right? Because in theory, I feel like, and we'll see, right? It's one game, it's 6 throws, it's obviously overreaction. But I don't feel like this is Geno Smith 2 years ago. I feel like, ironically, like many years ago when I think it was Kurt Warner maybe that was the Giants quarterback. And then once they went in on Eli years ago, they had to stay there. And I feel like this is now, like once you go in on Daniel Jones, I think the Giants have to stay there. So I'll be curious when that happens. I'll be curious, frankly, if that happens because, if Eli and they have a manageable schedule start, they play at the Cowboys. Who knows if Zeke will be there? Who knows who's going to be there with the Cowboys? And they play Bills at home, Bucks on the road, Redskins at home. I mean, that is a manageable 3-1, 2-2 type start. I just think it's going to be so fascinating to watch, assuming that Daniel Jones can keep up some, iteration of what he did last night, because I think that he is now the top 10 pick. He is the future of the franchise. once you go to him in the regular season, you can't go back.
Yeah, and Kurt Warner even talked about that. When he was the veteran quarterback backing up Eli Manning, they pulled Eli Manning out of the game and put in Kurt Warner. And Kurt Warner told them afterwards, don't ever do that again. All right, don't ever do that to a young quarterback. Afterwards, he said, leave him in there. It's his team now. I'm calling my shot right now. Daniel Jones will be the starting quarterback for the New York Giants week 7 at home against the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh!
Here's why I say that. The week before is a Thursday night game at New England. They're going to get pistol whipped in Foxborough by the New England Patriots. Then you're going to get not only a full week, but an extra couple of days to get him prepared for an Arizona team completely on the rebuild. And we're going to see Kyler Murray versus Daniel Jones face off Sunday, October 20th. That is a 1 Eastern time kickoff right here on Fox.
Wow.
See that?
What a plug.
How about that?
All I know, that was excellent. I lost you somewhere around pistol whipped, but I just think it's going to be fascinating to watch. And you talk about, we spent so much time talking about Kyler Murray throughout the offseason, Dwayne Haskins, who did not look that good last night. I think we all kind of just defaulted to like, yeah, we're probably not going to see Daniel Jones. And if we do, like, it'll be late. And I know Eli's not good, but whatever. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch this one unfold as the season goes on.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific.
Right now, he is a former NFL quarterback. He covers the NFL for SiriusXM NFL Radio, and he also is a pro football-focused analyst, one of my favorite sites, and it's Bruce Gradkowski joining us here on FSR. Bruce, Jonas Knox, Aaron Torres, thanks so much for the time.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me.
All right, so I got to ask you, you were a former teammate of Antonio Brown. On a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised are you at some of the hijinks that have happened so far at Raiders camp?
You know, I'm a little surprised he's out of practice because I know how much the guy loves football and how hard he works. But it's just an unfortunate incident. You know, I heard he did it in a cryo machine when he was working out across seas and he forgot to put slippers on. But you know, and that's sad. Look, accidents happen, so you're going to miss some practices. But the whole helmet issue that just came about, you know, that's surprising me even more because I don't think, you know, I played for John Gruden, so I could only imagine Gruden behind scenes right now. You know, and I hope some of it's on Hard Knocks, but you know, Gruden's going to cut that out. And you know, so I could only imagine what's going on there because they're trying to get prepared for the season. The last thing they want is some more drama.
And obviously, look, Antonio Brown, there is something wrong. But as somebody who's been in NFL locker rooms, college locker rooms for most of your life, how distracting or is it distracting the idea that your best player, not only do you not know when he's on the field, but reports are a lot of people within the organization don't even know where this guy is on a day-in, day-out basis.
Yeah, you know, that gets frustrating. I mean, honestly, that's one thing I did. I think Tomlin did a great job of. I know, you know, things hit the fan towards the end there, but Tomlin didn't let these little things get to him, you know, until they boiled over and it started, you know, lingering on the football field. Tomlin knew how to put up with them, you know, get him to game day. Everyone was happy, and we were winning. And I think in Oakland, they need to get back to winning. So this drama stuff is even more relevant now because, you know, they have a lot of work to do to get to where they want to go. And the last thing they need is, you know, some things that are happening off the field that, you know, you don't need to carry on the field. So, hey, I'm hoping he gets back soon because I want to see that relationship. I want to see how that offense works with AB, see how Derek Carr and him, you know, can connect and where it goes from there.
Real quick, when you say that Mike Tomlin kind of knew how to handle stuff, not let it affect the whole team, what did Mike Tomlin do? How did he approach those situations as opposed to some other coaches that you might have had throughout your time in the NFL?
Well, the thing I respected about Tomlin is he approached every day the same way. So he wasn't an emotional roller coaster, so that rubs off on your team. You know, it was very steady there. My first year there in 2014, we started out 0-4, and if I'm at other organizations, sometimes you go into the facility week 5 and everyone's tight. You know, coaches' jobs are on the line. Everyone's nervous. You have to win. You have to find a way. But not in Pittsburgh. You know, it was day-to-day business. You got to keep working, keep doing what we're doing. And, it just felt the same every day. And I think that's one thing Tomlin brings is consistency. And, yes, not every coach is perfect. And, you know, sometimes the details may lack. But at the end of the day, being a good coach is trying to get the best out of your players, knowing how to get the best out of your players, and winning on Sundays. You know, if you're winning, a lot of things can get swept under the rug. And that's what Oakland's looking to do. That's what the Steelers have done, you know, in the past. And the Steelers even have to get back to doing that. So this is, you know, it's very exciting that the preseason has started and football is right around the corner. I spent all day watching all the games from yesterday because I'm grading them for Pro Football Focus. So I'm able to see every throw every week. So it gives me a good look on some of these guys.
All right, well, I'm glad you took us there. He is Bruce Gradkowski, former NFL quarterback, SiriusXM NFL radio host. You can hear his show every Thursday, 11 to 3 p.m. Eastern time on SiriusXM NFL radio. And as you mentioned, Pro Football Focus analyst, and he's joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Bruce, that being said, who jumped out to you last night at the quarterback position, preferably the rookie quarterbacks that you look at and say, this guy's got an opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the guys, I try not to judge too heavily right now because, look, the game's moving fast for them. It's a new speed. You go from OTAs to mini camp to training camp, and each step of the way the game gets a little faster. Preseason games will feel fast, and regular season is even another step up, and not even talking about playoffs yet. So each level you go, the game continues to speed up, and especially for these young quarterbacks. And, you know, when I watch these guys, you know, I look at like a Daniel Jones. Of course, he goes right down the field and score, but he looks comfortable out there. He looks poised. He's making good decisions. It was only one drive, but what I get from that is he's doing that on a day-to-day basis in training camp. You just don't show up to the field on game day and play tremendously better than you've been practicing. So I get that from Jones. I think Drew Locke, you know, he's fortunate because they have five preseason games this year, and he looked a little shaky in the Hall of Fame game. This week he looked a lot more comfortable, but you could just tell things look rushed. Everything looks fast. Even his good throws look a little uncomfortable. And that just takes time because Drew Locke out of college, I noticed that his footwork wasn't the greatest. So it's just going to take time to work that, understand the timing and rhythm of throws and the routes and how to throw each throw. You know, with Drew Locke, I noticed a lot of his 18 to 20-yard routes, the big in routes, he's missing. He's skipping it to guys because it's not because he doesn't have the arm strength, but you learn how to make those throws downfield. It's more of a touch. It's more of a rhythm to it, throwing on the right footwork. I think he's going to be very fortunate enough to watch Joe Flacco do it this year. And Locke will continue to get better. He has the arm strength, but look, every level from high school to college to the NFL, it's not about the physical ability. It's more of the mental side of things. How fast can you pick up the offense? How do you understand the defenses? How can you handle the ups and downs, the adversity? And that's what will be interesting to see. I look at, you know, Kyler Murray. I mean, and look, these guys didn't play much, especially Kyler Murray and Daniel Jones. But Kyler Murray, man, it's just fun watching him play because the ball just zips out of his hands. He's got more than enough arm strength, and it's only going to get more and more exciting watching him play, watching him make those elusive plays. You know, Gardner Minshew, I watch him, and sometimes these rookies, even Josh Rosen for the Dolphins, they're trying to see too much. And when you catch the ball in the shotgun, you can't look left and look right and look left again and throw. You know, it's like crossing the street. You know, you can't look all both ways 100 times and then expect to make a good decision. A lot of times it's better to play decisive than right. And as a young guy, you try overthinking things. You try doing too much. And I even saw that a little bit with Rosen. Take what the defense gives you and move on. So as I watch these quarterbacks, you know, like I said, it's still early, But this game's flying around for them, and by the last preseason game, they'll feel a lot more comfortable, and they'll continue to get better with the right coaching. So it's just fun to watch their progress as well.
So real quick, Bruce, on Kyler Murray, we noticed, he really kind of, like you said, the ball flew right out of his hand. Is that kind of the way that Cliff Kingsbury wants him to play, or is that a byproduct of get rid of the ball, we don't need you getting hit in the preseason, somewhere in between? What do you think about that?
I think it's a little bit of both. I definitely think Cliff Kingsbury wanted to start Kyler Murray out fast, make him feel good, get him some completions, short throws, screens, let him move out of the pocket a little bit, his running screen pass to Larry Fitzgerald on the left side. You know, just different things, but they're not going to open up the whole offense. So a preseason is a lot about getting guys started. I mean, look at Baker Mayfield, right? He goes right down the field and scores. But the best thing about Mayfield, he took what the defense gave him as that drive went on. Check down, check down, check down. Next thing you know, single high safety. He's got seam routes called. Looks off the safety, hitches up, fires a missile. Perfect ball placement over to safety, safe where his receiver could go up and catch it. Boom, touchdown. The fans go nuts, and Mayfield's the hero like he finished last season. So it's going to be very exciting to watch where the Browns team goes, especially with Freddie Kitchens, how he steers the ship, if he can steer it and handle the adversity throughout the season. But it's very exciting watching those guys, and I'll be looking forward to watching the Steelers tonight and a few other games. So, but it's cool. It's just, hey, Jonas, I'm excited to watch football, and excited that it's back.
I can't tell you. I was so tired of the NBA. I got to be honest with you. Enough with guys like an Instagram post. I would listen to Bruce Gradkowski break down the quarterback position all day for Pro Football Focus. Bruce Gradkowski, former NFL quarterback, SiriusXM NFL radio host. Every Thursday, 11 to 3 p.m. Eastern time on SiriusXM radio, you can hear Bruce. And also, again, Pro Football Focused analyst. Bruce, thanks so much, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, Jonas, look, I got scared. I popped up Google, and I see you and Brady Quinn looking like a stepbrother's picture. I kind of got nervous a little bit.
It's all good. Listen, anybody next to Brady always looks a little bit off. You know, he's God's gift. Just ask him. That guy's a pain in my ass, by the way.
Brady with that Quinn. Beautiful hair, yeah. I get jealous of him all the time. I played with him in Cleveland for a little bit, and of course I shaved my head, but you're right. He's a good-looking dude.
He's a good guy. Thanks, Bruce. We appreciate it. Man.
All right, guys. Thanks. Have a good one.
All right. Bruce Gradkowski, Aaron Torres, Jonas Knox in for the Odd Couple here from the Geico Fox Sports Radio Studios.